The reading of God's word this morning, Hebrews 11th chapter and the 4th verse. By faith, Abel offered to God a more acceptable sacrifice than Cain, through which he was commended as righteous, God commending him by accepting his gifts. And through his faith, though he died, he still speaks.
Trip as I come up. That's bad. The song we sang just a few moments ago is an interesting song, Faith of Our Fathers. I kind of assumed it was written as a kind of hymn for America because we sing about the fathers of our faith, the folks who came here as pilgrims, primarily because they were being persecuted for their faith back home. In reality, that's not the case. Interestingly enough, it was written in 1849 by a man named Frederick William Faber in memory of the martyrs who had died in England. Interestingly enough, it really came about the time of the establishment of the Church of England by Henry VIII, and it was really a Catholic hymn because some of those folks were dying for their faith. But it's really an interesting song. It talks about the faith of our fathers living still. And you saw in our text this faith of a man named Abel. We're going to be looking at three of the characters. And in fact, they're the earliest examples of folks who live by faith. And we're going to look at those three characters today in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 4 through 7. The first, let me turn it on. There we go. The first one is our man Abel. By faith, Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained the testimony that he was righteous. God testifying about his gifts through faith, though he is dead, he still speaks. It's interesting that we have this man Abel. Now, I'm not quite sure. Cain and Abel are the first children born to Adam and Eve after they go out of the garden. You'll remember they're cast out of the garden because they've eaten of that tree, and so they're gone. I'm not sure they're the first children born to them, though, because you may remember that one of the curses that's going to be placed on Eve is she's going to feel pain in bearing children. So I have a suspicion she'd had children before and didn't have that pain. And so now she has other children. We need to have some other children because later on we're going to see Cain going off and finding a wife. And so there have to be some other children born as well. And it may well be some born before Cain and Abel. But Cain and Abel are these first two characters. And it's interesting because more ink is spilled on Cain than on Abel, which is, I think, interesting to us. Our man Abel offers a better sacrifice. Why is it better? Interestingly enough, a long time ago, a man named Philo contended it was because he offered a blood sacrifice, and Cain offers a grain sacrifice. But it's interesting because in the Old Testament, grain sacrifices are perfectly acceptable to God. In fact, in the book of Leviticus, there's a whole chapter, Leviticus chapter 2, the whole chapter is about grain sacrifices that are acceptable to God. So I don't think that really is the issue. Another suggestion, which was made, interestingly enough, when the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Old Testament, was made, was that he offered it the wrong way. Cain offered it the wrong way. Here's the text. This is from chapter 4, verse 7 of Genesis, from the Septuagint. Did you not sin when you offered your sacrifice incorrectly, but you did not divide it correctly? He chopped it up the wrong way. And that was the real reason that it wasn't acceptable. That doesn't seem to be the problem either. Another suggestion is that Abel offers the first fruits, and he offers the best, and Cain just sort of offers whatever. Sort of like you give the best and the first, and so you give the first tomato and then the first nice juicy tomato, and you give him the ones that are rotten and not so good anyway. And so one suggestion is that. I don't think that really is the issue, though. In our text, you'll notice the issue is our man Abel offers by faith. Do you see that? He offers by faith. He is righteous. He's a righteous man. You see that, interestingly enough, in the early writers who talk about this. Our man Abel is not justified by his sacrifice, but he showed his faith by his works. And that's going to be the recurring theme all the way through chapter 11. Faith always does something. Faith always works. It always acts something out. And so our man, Abel, has faith. And in fact, we'll learn later on, and when we get down a little further in verse 6, that it's impossible to please God without faith. And our man, he does just that. Cain's sacrifice is not acceptable because there's something wrong about the way he does it. And in fact, the text really, 1 John chapter 3, verse 12, we learn there that Cain is a wicked man, and so he's a sinful man, and something is wrong with Cain. The difficulty with Cain's sacrifice is Cain. He has the wrong kind of attitude, the wrong attitude toward God, and he doesn't do it to please God. He's doing it because he thinks he needs to offer a sacrifice, and so he's just going through the motions. But he's not a man of faith. Our man Abel is the first man listed as a man of faith who puts his faith into action. You know, he had Adam as his daddy and Eve as his mama, but the man who is described as a man of faith is this man Abel. And he does it. It's really quite interesting. In our text, you'll notice if we're reading through the text, it will say, through which he obtained the testimony that he was righteous, the which there could either be his sacrifice or his faith. But in the context, it's his faith. It's through his faith that he gets this testimony from God that he's a righteous man because he's a man of faith. Abel sets this example of faith and righteousness that still speaks to us today, even though he's dead. He's been dead for a long time, but he's still preaching. He's still preaching to us. Martin Luther, a long time ago, said this of Abel. Abel is more alive than ever. This was in 1700. Abel is more alive than ever. So great a thing is faith. It is life in God. So even Martin Luther got the point. He's a man of faith. Our second man of faith is going to be this man, Enoch. By faith, Enoch was taken up so that he would not see death. He was not found because God took him up. And he obtained the witness that before his being taken up, he was pleasing to God. Without faith, it is impossible to please him, for we know that he who comes to God must believe that he is and that he's the rewarder of those who seek him. So the next man of faith in our Bible is, interestingly enough, this man, Enoch. In the intertestamental period, he's described as a man who is a prophet. There's a work called Sirach, and another called The Wisdom of Solomon, and another were called First Enoch, all of which talk about him as being this man of faith. And he indeed is this man of faith. You'll see the same thing. Whoops, it's not there. I thought I'd put it there. You see it also in, interestingly enough, in Jude verse 14. There it describes him as the seventh generation from Adam, and he's described as this prophet who has prophesied something that is still true in the day of Jude. He prophesies that God with more than 1,000 angels will execute judgment on the ungodly who spoke against him. Interesting enough, isn't it? When's that going to happen? Well, I think that's going to happen in the flood, which is around the corner now. But here's a man who has faith, and he prophesies because God has given him this vision of what's going to happen. Interestingly enough, the text says he was taken up. And that word taken up is a word that really means removed or transferred. He changed places. He goes from one place, from the earth, to the very presence of God. If Enoch had died a normal death like his contemporaries in the book of Genesis, it would have read something like this. He lived X number of years, and he died. But that's not what it says about Enoch. Enoch is this man who has faith, and his faith makes the difference. Our text says he was pleasing to God. If you're reading it, though, from the book of Genesis and you're reading the Hebrew text, it says he walked with God. Isn't that interesting? He walked with God. He's walking this path that is pleasing to God. He is walking with God, and that's why he pleases God. God will reward the just as he did Abel and Enoch. The just today are rewarded as well. And so we see that there. Here are a couple of passages from the New Testament that talk about the same thing. The first one is Ephesians chapter 2, verses 8 through 10. Without faith, it is impossible to please. God's good works we produce is that which he works in us, through us, to his glory. For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. Interesting language. Same kind of language, walking with him. And so it is this man who, again, walks with God. Here's another passage from Philippians chapter 2, verse 13. For it is God who is at work in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure. God is working in us so that we will work and we will accomplish these good things. These rewards are never earned. They are all of grace. Rewards are not payment for service rendered. It's God's blessing to those who put their faith in him. Our man, Abel, put his faith in God. Cain didn't. Abel did. Our man, Enoch, puts his faith in God. And it makes all of the difference. And so we see these wonderful things happening. Our next character, interestingly enough, is Noah. By faith, Noah, being warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence prepared an ark for the salvation of his household, by which he condemned the world, and he became an heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. Good old Noah received instructions from God, and he, regarding what's going to happen in the future. You may remember when we started our study in Hebrews 11 earlier, we spent some time talking about Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen, and the word things there, I told you, could mean events. Good old Noah has probably never seen a drop of rain in his life. God's watering the earth differently back then. And he's never seen a drop of rain. And he definitely has never seen a cataclysmic flood. And he also has never seen a super ocean going cargo carrier. He's never seen anything like that. But he knows God's going to make a difference. And he puts his faith in God. Everyone's making fun of him. They're saying, what are you building this ark for? And why are you building this big boat? What are you going to do with this big box? What in the world are you going to do with it? What's the benefit of all of this? He has no experience in what's going to happen, but he trusts God, and so he's going to inherit the earth after the flood. You'll notice again we get a by which. For being warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence he prepared an ark for the salvation of his household, by which he condemned the world. What's the which there? Well, it could be the ark. By the ark, he condemns the world. Or it could well be, I think, better in the context, by faith. By faith, he condemns the world. Good old Noah, interestingly enough, is going to spend 100 years preaching. Now, how'd you like to preach for 100 years and never get a convert? I mean, he's got 100 years of preaching, and there are no converts. The only converts are his own three boys and their wives and his wife, but there are no real converts. But he's preached for 100 years. Interestingly enough, Ezekiel chapter 14, verses 14 and then again in verse 20, will suggest that there are just three folks in the Old Testament who are Old Testament characters Noah and Daniel and Job, who could save only themselves by their righteousness. They couldn't save anybody else. But they're the ones who, he's the one who's put his faith, they've put their faith in God. Noah is this man who has this heir. He is an heir of salvation. And so he's going to, again, proclaim this wonderful message. In 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 20, there's this wonderful story where good old Peter is going to talk about baptism. And he will say that he is going to save the world by building this ark, but really the world is saved by the flood. It is the flood that saves them, and it's not his doing it. In the same way, baptism doesn't save us. We are saved by the flood, by baptism, but it's not our being baptized that saves us. It rather is our acting in faith, and it's God who saves us. It's by the grace of God. In obedient faith, good old Noah survived the flood with his wife and his sons. The flood became the means of salvation for Noah. It was also a destructive judgment that is brought upon the world and will condemn the world. Noah's testimony condemns the world to this very day. Interestingly enough, Jesus will use Noah's experience as a testimony about what's going to happen at the second coming. This is Matthew chapter 24, verses 37 and 38. For the coming of the Son of Man will be just like the days of Noah. For in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day Noah entered the ark. There's going to be some similarity. Just like back in Noah's day, folks are just going about things business as normal. They're doing things as they've always done them. And so it will be when the Lord comes again. Folks will just be doing things as they normally they've always done them. They won't be putting their trust in God. When He comes, will Jesus find us trusting Him? You see, the flood comes, and good old Noah has put his faith in God, and he's built that ark, and he's put those animals in, and he's doing all of the things that God has said. The evidence of faith, that faith here is that faith always produces something. It produces works. There will be works because faith produces works. And that's the recurring theme of this whole section. Faith produces works. And so, here we have these three great men of faith. They're our faith of our fathers. They're our fathers. Long, long grace makes the difference. We're going to sing a song, an invitation song here in a few moments. Here's my text. This is the one I thought I'd put it here. Here's the passage from 1 Peter chapter 2. When the patience of God kept waiting in the days of Noah during the construction of the ark in which a few, that is eight persons, were brought safely through water, corresponding to that, baptism now saves you. Not the removal of dirt from the flesh, but an appeal of God to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Jesus. So perhaps there are those today who need to respond in that same fashion, putting their faith in God in baptism. And we'd be happy to assist you in doing that. We're going to sing this invitation song, and if you need to respond in any way to the invitation, either requesting prayers or perhaps deciding that you need to be baptized, we'd be glad to assist you in doing that.